As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
The Phil Hay Show.
Hello there. Welcome to The Phil Hay Show, brought to you with The Athletic and The Square Ball. I'm Dan from The Square Ball, along with Michael Normanton from The Square Ball and Phil Hay, here straight from Jesse Marsh's press conference, also from The Athletic. We will get into all that in due course because we're twice a week now, Phil. We go towards the end of the week after the press conference. That's Friday afternoon for this one, pre-Villa. We'll get into Villa shortly and then we react to the weekend's game as well. So we'll be getting back together on Monday to talk about that.
God be praised. We have a game. We have a game. Do you know, it's been so long that there's a new press room at Thorpe Arch suddenly.
And describe that to us then. What's that look like?
Well, it was the old sleeping quarters that were built under Bielsa's reign and now have now been converted. The issue at Thorpe Arch is they've never had space for the press, never like a designated area, which most Premier League clubs these days. So they've had to commandeer this room and it now has seats. It now has a proper desk for Marsh as opposed to just the table. I remember once, I can't remember who would have been manager, but it may well have been Brian McDermott. Someone messaged me saying to me, I'm looking at the state of the table at the front of the press room. And honestly, I own a business that sells office equipment and I will donate a desk to give whoever the said manager was, let's say Brian McDermott, a quality desk to sit behind. Well, now Jesse Marsh has something that you would consider to be sort of, you know, Champions League-esque, really.
We've come a long way then, basically.
Yes, definitely.
Did it used to look a bit like a car boot sale, that kind of thing?
Yeah, 100%. It looked like the sort of table you might find in a primary school that had been there for about 8 years, yes.
So after all of Bielsa's work, getting the sockets in the right place and everything,
it's gone. Yeah.
Just erasing his memory,
it's
his legacy.
Gone. It's gone, yes.
Wow. TheAthletic.com/LeedsPod, by the way, if you want to sign up for The Athletic. £1 a month for 6 months. Right, Phil, let's get into it then. You have just hot-footed it down the A1, is it, from Thorpe Arch to get here?
Yes,
to our studio,
wet and windy.
Just off Gelded Roads. What was it like then in the room? What Jesse was saying? Where should we start with this one?
There was a lot to talk about because even though we've had no games since first weekend of September away at Brentford, there is a lot that has happened. International games that players have been involved in, players who were injured coming away from Brentford weren't involved or had picked up problems during the game who have been trying to get themselves fit. And basically, the question of how have Leeds kept themselves ticking over in this period, it's been a good thing actually that there have been international games because it has allowed a fair few players to get away and to play with either full national sides or under-21s in the case of someone like Ilan Melier, helped them to maintain a little bit of match sharpness in what is, you know, such a long break that it's actually not that far off the length of the break they're going to have during the World Cup. It's about half the length of time everybody was out for during the first COVID lockdown, although admittedly the added complication there was that everybody was forced to stay at home and weren't able to train together, and that has been different. So they have done 11v11s and they have kept the training cycle going as they would have wanted to. But I suppose the question in Marsh's head will be, and he seemed very confident about this, but the question will be, how much are they going to look on Sunday like a team who have the rhythm and have the flow and have not just had a lengthy break that wasn't planned? Because this has kind of come from nowhere. You know, the World Cup is fine. You can preempt that because you know it's in the diary. And Marsh said that they're going to start that by having 2 weeks off. And then we'll work back up to full tilt in time for Boxing Day or the Boxing Day fixtures. But this one was totally out of the blue.
And a few injuries to speak of then ahead of Villa. We've got the young man with his stubbed toe, Archie Gray.
Yes, Archie Gray stubbed his toe on a door at home. So not the most dramatic at home injury ever. Didn't fall through a coffee table or run over his foot with a fly mower or anything like
that. Have you done any of those?
But, not personally, no. And nothing as weird as, was it Ferdinand who injured his knee playing FIFA? Just by the way, he was resting his feet on the table in front of him.
Yeah, I think he overextended his knee or his hamstring or something, didn't he, by having his leg up for too long.
Yeah, I think that's right. So nothing like that. He basically just banged it on a door and he's suffered a small fracture to it, which is only going to keep him out for a couple of weeks. But he won't be involved this weekend. How much he would have been involved anyway is obviously a moot point. Marsh did get on to talking about the kind of gap at the moment between the under-21s and the first team squad and the feeling, which I think we'd probably all share, that there are some players who are kind of falling between both. You know, you've got Javi, you've got Archie Gray, you've got Sonny Perkins scoring an awful lot of goals. Are they first team players? Are they 21s players? Are they too good for one bunch, not quite ready for the next? He was saying that's a kind of balance they're having to strike. Adam Forshaw, on the other hand, would definitely have been involved at the weekend. He's twisted an ankle, which is not serious, not severe, but he won't play against Villa or be involved against Villa. And Stuart Dallas, obviously still on the way back from his fractured femur. But, and I hardly dare say this, everybody else seems to be available.
I did immediately have flashbacks to Brentford at home last year, where I think at one point for about 10 minutes we had a more or less fully fit squad, barring like maybe one or two exceptions. And then by the end of it, it was like, actually, no, it's all back again.
There goes Phillips, there goes Bamford.
It was, that was the game where we thought, this is the turning point. Everyone's back, the season kicks off now, and then, yeah, everything happened.
I think losing Phillips and Cooper in that game was obviously far from ideal. But I think after Bamford scoring that equaliser and then being absent again, that was the real kick in the teeth. And that was the one that put you kind of back to square one with your biggest players or some of your most influential players gone. I guess the biggest question mark going into this weekend would have been over Rodrigo, who dislocated his shoulder against Everton. He's available. He's trained this week. Marsh says he's in really good shape. They didn't send him for surgery. And I was asking Marsh whether or not that was a judgment call, as opposed to looking at it and going, oh, he's basically absolutely fine. Because we've all been following the stories with Calvin Phillips recently over at Manchester City and the fact that, you know, his shoulder has been, that he dislocated when he was at Leeds, has not recovered sufficiently to stop him needing an operation. And, you know, his World Cup chances are slightly in doubt because of that. So obviously the question applied to Rodrigo, is it a kind of serious dislocation and will there be implications for him further down the line? Marsh didn't seem to think so and said that really it needed kind of, in his words, conservative treatment just to manage it. And by looking at him this week in training, they seem pretty happy with him. So they've got Bamford, they've got Rodrigo, they've got Nonto, who has played some games for Italy during the international break. They've got, even reaching further than that, Sonny Perkins, who just cannot stop scoring goals at youth team level at the moment. It's funny, when you pull up his Soccerway page, it's just goal after goal after goal after goal. And admittedly, as I say, you know, under-19s with England, under-21s with Leeds, but they need goals, Leeds, and, you know, have a few options up there.
We'll talk more in part two about where are the goals going to come from, because we do have options there now. And there's a bit of a spread among the players, and we have Nonto, as you mentioned. First of all, specifically on Villa, talking about team selections, one of the first questions there about that was right back, Ayling and Rasmus both in contention. Can't make a wrong decision, he said. Which way do you think that one's going to go?
I think you'll lean towards Christensen. Christensen did have a good performance for Denmark during the international break, probably better than any of his performances for Leeds so far. He's certainly found the adjustment more difficult, I think, than some of the other summer signings, which is unexpected from my point of view, because I did think that he looked like a bit of a banker at £10 million and might yet be. But I thought he'd probably be able to adapt a little bit more quickly than this. I don't think Marsh will want to rush him out the team, but in saying that, I did think that Ayling had a pretty good impact when he played off the bench against Brentford. I suspect that we're more likely to see a change on the left side of the two centre-backs. The bigger discussion today was almost about Llorente and what had gone on at Brentford and his part in some of the goals that Brentford conceded. And Marsh said he'd spoken to him, that he still saw Llorente as very important, that he did think Llorente had had good games and everything else. I don't think he was trying to deny that what had gone on at Brentford was a mess. But he said himself that when he spoke to Llorente, he'd talked about the need to kind of work Cooper back into the picture, back into the team. Cooper has, you know, very little involvement because of injury so far this season, but is fit for the weekend. And him say, Marsh saying that to Llorente made me think that there's, I thought reading between the lines there, there's a pretty high likelihood that we'll see Cooper start against Villa at the weekend. But I feel as if he will probably stick with Christensen.
What do you reckon, Michael? Who would you go for?
I'd be tempted to put Cooper and Ailing in, but I think he will. I think he'll leave Christensen in, and yeah, he more or less said in saying he wants to work Cooper back in. That's another way of saying I want to work Llorente out, isn't it? You can't. There's no other way of looking at that.
It could be taken in that way, but I think the long and short is the beat. Yeah, it's that sounded to me like a swerve towards Cooper, and I think when Marsh has spoken previously about his centre-backs, he has kind of made it clear that at the moment it's Koch on the right-hand side and that Cooper is probably preferred choice on the left if everybody's fit and available.
We said in one of the shows, I think it was it last week, that we should do a shot of Buckfast every time we mention Bielsa on the show. So get ready with your bottle of Bucky if you have one, because I'm going to say, going right back to Bielsa, He used to prefer having a lefty on the left and a right-footer on the right. What's the thinking behind that? Is it just to do with distribution and body shape, things like that?
I think so, yeah, and balance. He was so big on the centre-backs distributing the ball rather than... Well, he wasn't averse to long balls, but it was like long balls with purpose, you know, so Leeds would play quite a few diagonals, but they'd be looking for somebody with the diagonals as opposed to just hoofing it up front. But they also played wide a lot, you know, they did use the flanks a huge amount. So you're a right-footed centre-back, a left-footed centre-back, it makes it easier for them, like you say, to use the body shape to open up and spread the ball wide. And all round, I think he just saw it as the right balance, having one and the other.
Sticking with Strouk at left-back, though, you think, for now? Or do you think Firpo's got a chance of pushing him out?
I think Firpo has got a chance, yeah. Again, he was speaking about the fact that Firpo wasn't kind of fully fit and available down at Brentford, but would be for this weekend. It's a difficult call, that one, I think, because I don't think Strouk's been bad at left-back. I've always just been of the opinion that because he is essentially a left-sided centre-back, that it would probably catch up with him there at some point. And it was asking a lot for him to to be continuously effective or, you know, competent in that role.
It's been a lot for Firpo to do that as well, in fairness.
It really has.
My response to that, Phil, was going to be exactly along those lines and said, well, Strouk hasn't really put a foot wrong, has he? Whereas Firpo has put plenty of feet wrong.
No, which is why it's a very fair debate. I suppose what you have to say with Firpo is that if you are standing by him as they have this summer and this season, and if you are saying that he is your left back, you have to at some point play him into a little bit of form, or try to play him into form, or try to play him into a run of games that kind of solidify his place in the team and make him look like he should be in it. Otherwise, what on earth is the point of having him here? You literally have no left back and you're almost teeing yourself up for the scenario where it no longer works for Strouk and you're suddenly scrabbling about trying to fill that area. I completely see the issues with Firpo and the problems that have been with him previously. And let's not get back into this, but a left back in the summer might have been a good idea. But he is the left back in the squad. And I do feel like we're, all of us really, of the view that it hasn't worked with him so far. And I think all of us unconvinced that it definitely will. But I still think we need time and games yet to be 100% sure about which way it's going.
There are quite a few rumours rumbling under the surface about Kai Wagner coming in the January window. Do you think there's any merit in that?
Well, it's going to be a position, I think, longer term that they're going to have to look at. When we asked about him during the summer, though, there was nothing really doing there. And which isn't to say that they don't like him or don't rate him. It was just that they were not going to get involved with that one before the end of the window. And it went very quickly from Firpo injuring his hip and Leeds looking Marseille and were looking at left backs to them pretty much closing the door on that one and deciding that they would stick with Firpo and they would make do with what they had, to the extent that they were happy for Leif Davis to go to Ipswich. Although I think that was as much about accepting that the offer Davis was getting from Ipswich was well worth him taking. Given his contract was running out at Leeds, it didn't make much sense or wasn't particularly fair to him to keep him around. But yeah, I do sort of feel like they're in a position where they have a left back in Firpo who hasn't settled into that position and nobody else to play there who isn't makeshift or slightly makeshift or playing out of position. You could use Harrison there, but Harrison's a winger. You can use Strouk there, but Strouk's really a centre back.
Ask Gareth Southgate, he uses right wingers at left back.
Yeah, and to go back to Ivan Toney, who we spoke about, what a call up that was.
Yes.
Much like we were saying with the midfielder Kamara at Salzburg, when it was being reported that he was joining Leeds and it was done, and Leeds were saying, I don't think it is, and I don't think he will be. And I kind of made the point that he might not want to buy a house in Allwood Lake quite yet. Same with Ivan Toney. I wouldn't be cancelling whatever he's got planned in November in anticipation of a seat on the plane.
Yeah, there were one or two words actually about Jackie and his potential for a call-up. It's one of those things where you feel like Southgate's got in his mind that he knows what his squad's going to be. He's not going to start changing anything now. And maybe Harrison's time might come after the World Cup. And there's a lot of talk of Southgate not even being there at that point.
Yeah, that's it. But then again, I think that probably begs the question of what Lucan Harrison will have if Southgate isn't head coach, because Southgate does take a specific interest in certain players in the way that he did in Bamford, in the way that he did has in Harrison without calling him up. They've kept eyes on him pretty closely without giving him a chance. But you feel as if, with the exception of the odd change here or there, the England squad, particularly for the tournaments, always kind of reverts to this formula. And I think I might have said that even though Toney had had a call-up and Rashford had been left out, it wouldn't be remotely surprising if, irrespective of what goes on over the next month, when the World Cup squad's announced, Rashford's back in and Toney is nowhere to be seen. And I have to say, I just do not understand the point in calling up Toney to not play him at all. And, spare us the stuff about, you can have a look at him in training. He's a Premier League player. You've got to use him.
Yes, still time for him. For the World Cup and afterwards as well. He's still young, is what Marsh said of Jackie Harrison. And on the other side of the pitch, Sinisterra, he had good things to say about him.
Yeah, he had a very good international break. Goals, looking good, is good, has been impressive. Another really decent finish away down at Brentford, which was probably the highlight of an otherwise pretty difficult afternoon. He's starting to look like a find, and he's starting to look like he's got the potential to be the best of these players who've come in. I think the nice thing is that you could say that about more than one of them. I like Aronson an awful lot. There's quite a lot to admire about Rocker, I think, but Sinisterra just seems to have that thing about him. He's different to Rafinha. I wouldn't compare the two of them, but they do have slight similarities in that they're good at beating a man, they're good out wide, they've got pace, and they can kind of do something from not a huge amount, which was very much Sinisterra's goal at Brentford. It wasn't on a plate for him at all. But he's obviously been abroad in the international break, but is back, is fit. I'm absolutely certain we'll start if he's okay.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Heading further up the pitch then, we mentioned in part one there, where are the goals coming from, Phil? So Bamford is back. We have Nonto now available. Again, somebody who had good things said about him in the press conference just then, as did Sonny Perkins as well. So there are goals in this side, right across the spectrum in terms of age, experience, longevity at the club. What do you reckon then? Bamford in at the weekend?
Yes, I would imagine so. Absolutely not forgetting Gelhardt in all this as well. Because I think what they have is they have two experienced players who they would like to think they will get a huge amount from this season. So Bamford and Rodrigo. And then behind there and behind those two, there are a group of players who you can't expect or ask too much of, but who could all potentially blossom in quite an impressive way. Gelhardt being one, Nonto being another, and obviously Perkins as well, although it seems to me from what Marsh is saying that Perkins is further back in the pecking order, and I think absolutely categorises that type of player that we were discussing who is starting to fall now between the two squads and will want first team football at some stage, is probably finding under 21's football not easy for him, but it's not going to push him in the way that he needs to be longer term. Nonto, the last time any of us were able to speak to Marsh was after the Brentford game, when there was a hell of a lot to discuss because the transfer window had just closed. They'd ended up with Nonto having gone for Gakpo, having gone for Dieng over in France, having had that weird week where they were fine and they didn't need a forward, and then Rodrigo had injured the shoulder, and yes, they did need a forward, and it was all a scramble, and Nonto ended up coming in after midnight on deadline day when the deadline passed at 11 p.m. And obviously Marsh had said previously about him, asked, is he ready for the Premier League? He'd said, no, you know, I'm not sure he is. And the plan was, as we've mentioned, for him to come in a future window. It was only brought forward because neither Gakpo nor Dieng came off at the last minute. But Nonto has played for Italy in this international break. He's looked good for Italy. It's been very difficult to watch him and think to yourself, he doesn't look as if he should, to some extent, be involved. You know, I think if you were looking at him and saying he's an under-21s player and we won't need him this season, given the way the squad is and what Leeds have to choose from up front, you'd be getting it wrong, I think. And Marsh said himself he will be involved at the weekend. He will be in the squad. And he said that he kind of changed everybody's opinion of him. Not that they didn't think he was a good player, but actually he might be more ready for it than they anticipated. And clearly on the basis that they wanted to bring him in a later window, that was the kind of general mood with him, was that he would need time and he'd be a longer term project.
I should say, just on that point, just to interject, that Marsh in his press conference sort of reframed that statement that he made around that, wasn't it? That
he
did. For the future.
Yeah, no, he said, you know, you could say to me now that I should reconsider that statement. But he did try to sort of make the point that he was more talking about the fact that Nonto was somebody to work on in the longer term as opposed to impact player now. And as I say, you can't pretend that actually he was the player Leeds were going to sign in that window until the very, very last minute. But I think they have to let him loose, and it would make no sense not to. I think if he is a full Italy international and he's being trusted at that level, and if he has the experience as he does of playing elsewhere, so in Switzerland, which is not a high level league in comparison to the Premier League, but it is still top division in the country. There are still good players at that level. Yeah, I think it makes sense for him to get a chance.
And it's the international call-ups as well that make it more exciting, isn't it? I was saying over on our show, like if Leeds were trying to buy, let's say, somebody who was 18 years old on the fringes of the England squad, we'd be so excited about it, wouldn't we? But I think Marsh's comments, coupled with slight obscurity of the Swiss League versus the Premier League, kind of played it down a little bit, didn't it? Whereas, you know, he looks, from what I saw, a limited amount over the international break, he looks really, really useful and quite exciting. Did you see any of it?
I saw him saw him playing against Hungary, and didn't watch the England game because I tend to make a policy of not when there are no Leeds players involved. It's they're just so dry, those games. But yeah, I thought it was quite good. It's interesting, actually, the commentary on that game was suggesting that he'd not been given a chance at Leeds yet. And I thought, well, it's not been any games, so it seems it's a little bit early to be ruling him out at this stage. But I think, and the fact he's played at, albeit in a lower quality of league, but a men's league, you know, playing with actual grown-ups as opposed to playing in under-23s football, which you see is, when you see players in the under-23s, you see what an enormous difference it is at that level.
Also, his footprint is broader than Switzerland. You've got Mancini's thoughts on him in Italy. I think the fact that he's brought him into the squad at the age that he has, in what is quite a transitional period for Italy, tells you a lot. I mean, Mancini speaks very highly of him, and I don't think has any reason to if he doesn't genuinely rate him. So you're not merely talking about a kind of canvassing of opinion in a lower level league in Europe. You know, you're talking about somebody like Mancini who, you know, his team won the Euros, saying this guy is good and I want him to be involved. I mean, they had Immobile in the Italy squad, and there was a feeling in Italy after they failed to qualify for the World Cup that there had to be, you know, some sort of forward movement when it came to replacing the old guard and finding some new talent, and particularly new attacking talent. And they do seem to like Nonto. They do seem to think that he's got something about him that actually he merits being involved with the Italy national squad, which I think is pretty key. You do get circumstances where you have players involved who just get a bit of a nod for a short period and actually have no business being in the mix. But not him. I still think it will be probably prudent not to expect too much of him this season. But I still do look at him and think he could be a bit of a surprise him.
I've now got an image of Nonto saying to Jackie, keep your chin up, kid. You can get that international recognition if you can just stick at it.
But his style looks really, really encouraging, doesn't it? You can see why he's been recruited, because he's fast, he's direct, he's got that low centre of gravity, hasn't he? And he's built like the old proverbial brick outhouse.
And also, if Bamford can stay fit and stay in the team, and it is a bit of an if, but if he does, then the positions that are opening up for Nonto will be the sort of positions that he likes to play in and has played in so far. So he prefers himself as a secondary forward rather than out-and-out number nine. But he can also play wide, as he does for Italy, And I think particularly in the system Marsh has, it's wide without calling for wingers. You know, it's kind of wide forwards who are tucked in and quite inverted, which might suit him. So let's be honest, he's going to be a bench player for now, isn't he? Who knows if he'll get on Sunday, but I have a feeling that it might not be that long before Marsh is turning to him as an option off the bench if the game requires it.
And good to have exciting options off the bench as well. I think to play into this, almost the psychology of a crowd, having that feeling of someone coming on and there being a bit of a lift there, which not to just slag him off for the sake of it, but when it was Tyler Roberts every week, there was, certainly towards the end, there was that bit where everyone went...
Yeah. you're looking for games.
I suspect even Tyler Roberts at certain points is like, oh, you know.
But you are looking for game changers. Like, that's what you're getting at. Like, yeah, you want somebody who's going to give you something different and offer something.
And people will be like, the crowd will just get lifted, as they were when people saw Gellhart come in last season. They were like, something exciting is going to happen now. And hopefully he can be an option like that as well.
I do like the fact as well, and I think this will help Nonto, that the opinion of this one has swung from... this isn't really what we needed at the end of the window. And granted, that probably still stands. You know, I don't think, if you go back to the discussions we had after the window, we're not overly complimentary at all about the last week of it. But I think swung from that to looking at the way he's played for Italy and the amount of money he's cost, which is, you know, peanuts, if I'm allowed to call it that, by Premier League standards. You know,
for a full international?
Yeah, it's like £4 to £5 million, a lot of money in the world. But, you know, football-wise... you hardly ever see clubs spend that on players for the first team squad these days in the Premier League. It tends to be way above that. And I kind of think now, you know, Rock at 10 million, Christensen at 10 million is sort of like your bread and butter fee, you know. So if Nonto is good, if Nonto happens to be exceptional, same kind of value as Ilan Melier, and it could be a pretty decent signing, that.
Not to draw direct comparisons with them as footballers, but you may see him sort of used...
what, Melier and Nonto?
No, I was going to say Phil Foden, actually. The way that he was deployed at Man City coming off the bench, like, they didn't send him out on loan, they just used him sparingly and built up his minutes over the course of a season or two. You think maybe because he's 18, he's got time on his side to do that and just start building him up to the Premier League?
Yeah, it's slightly different at City, isn't it? Because the depth of choice there is so massive that you're not really ever under pressure to... completely flog your best kids, even if you feel like you should. And there was a lot of noise around Foden of people saying Guardiola doesn't play him enough, he needs to leave, you know, this, that. And I don't think that many people were saying that, but I did hear it said from time to time. Guardiola's attitude was, I know more than you, which he does. And, you know, I think the handling of Foden's been absolutely bang on, really. It is come through at the right rate and is... I think it's probably enjoy watching him as much as I do most players actually in England. He's an absolute treat. So yeah, with Nonto, that will be the plan. And I think that's what Mars was trying to allude to, was that in the grand scheme with Nonto, it was supposed to be about, you know, this kind of gradual step-by-step thing. That will still be the case, but he's obviously here now rather than coming in January. And, you know, if in January Leeds had signed him at a point where they had a lot of points on the board and were in really good shape, then again, the pressure to use him on him when he does play is reduced. But for now, they'll need to get something out of him.
And elsewhere in the forward line, Sonny Perkins, there was a lot of bigging him up in that press conference. Marsh saying he feels like he deserves big chances, and he's got to be knocking on the door now, hasn't he, with the amount of goals that he's churning out at the younger levels, admittedly, but still, he's not going to be too far away, is he?
Well, if you're scoring goals in the under-21s and your England youth team and everything else, then... and impressing in the way that Marsh said that he was, then you have to take a forward step, don't you? And if you take a forward step, there's only really one place for you to go, which is the first team squad, unless, of course, you're going to try and loan players out, as Leeds have done with Charlie Creswell. I was looking back to a piece I did, I think it was a mailbag I wrote about 2 months ago, and just having a laugh at a sort of throwaway line that I put in there saying something along the lines of, people at Thorpe Arch have been really impressed by Sonny Perkins. He'd only been in for a couple of weeks, but he was one of those who, this happens from time to time, people will say, he's been good. You know, just on the quiet, will say, oh, he's been really impressive without making a big deal of it. And he has been, and he scores and scores and scores, and they're still sorting out compensation with West Ham, as far as I'm aware, unless it's been done very, very recently, but it was still to be agreed. Although I don't think it's going to be a massive amount, because of the contract that he was offered at West Ham. I don't think they'll be paying hideous amounts of cash for Perkins, but he's a good one. He's been a good one to capture, I think.
Is he sort of a second forward then, or is he a striker, or is he an advanced midfielder? It's hard to tell, isn't it, at this stage?
Seems to me to be more of a second forward, but again, looks pretty versatile. Looks like he could be useful in a couple of positions.
Do you think there's still a hole in the squad for all of these attacking players? We don't seem to have an actual Bamford replacement, do we? It feels like when he's not there, we change our style of play to an extent.
I still feel like they want to think that Rodrigo is that man. I'm still not convinced that Rodrigo is that man, although I can't get away from the sense that Rodrigo tends to look best when he is at nine as opposed to anywhere else in the team. So that's not to say he is an out-and-out nine. I just don't think there's anywhere in this team, and likewise in the team that Bielsa had, I don't think there's anywhere that he suits better.
How old is Rodrigo now, and how long does he have on his contract?
He's 31 and he has another 2 years on his contract. So I think you'd have to say that if this one's going to work, it has to work now, really.
Yeah. Obviously, it's leading towards the question of would they bother extending it at that age, in that stage of his career?
Is a very, very good question. Very good question, and something they'll have to think about.
Is that 2 years from this summer just gone?
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. Right.
So he's at the same stage as Jack Harrison?
Yes. Yeah. Harrison, obviously being considerably younger than him and far more resale value, is the player you'd be prioritising if it came to tying to a contract. Rodrigo, they're going to have to think about the fact that when his contract is up, he will be 33. When, at that stage, will he have done enough? Will he have played well enough for them to consider keeping him? I mean, I guess his own earning potential and earning power is diminished as he gets older. But I think the bigger consideration will be, has he found a way to fit in this team, or has whoever the head coach is, you know, Marsh as it is at the moment, have they found a way to make him fit? Because that's been the story with Rodrigo, isn't it? That you've had this player who does have a lot about him and does clearly have talent and has played Champions League level in Spain with Valencia, and it just hasn't felt right. And, you know, to go back to the piece that my old colleagues, Tom Warville, wrote right when he came in, he said, you know, he's coming from a team who don't press and a team who don't really do what Bielsa's team as it was then do. And obviously Marsh's team are pressing side as well. Is this going to work? And I'm still of the mindset that it hasn't really.
Yeah, I mean, mind you, Marsh's football, you can sort of see the difference between that and Buckfast. Bielsa's football, in that Bielsa's was it was non-stop running, it was non-stop pressing.
And man-to-man.
Yeah. Non-stop closing down. And the spare man always seemed to be up front as well because of the way that the formation works. You leave the two centre-backs have got one centre-forward to deal with. Whereas with Marsh's, it seems like the pressing is a lot more targeted and sporadic versus Bielsa's, which was non-stop.
Yeah, it's the picking your moments to go, isn't it? It's the springing of traps. But I still look at various players and think that when it comes to pressing, Rodrigo is not the best of them and is probably not a kind of inherent strength in the way that it is with somebody like Brendan Aaronson, for example.
Just going back to Perkins momentarily, what do you think his pathway looks like from this point now where he's banging in goals for the 21s and at the England junior levels? Where does he go this season, next season? What does that look like?
Well, Marsh was saying that there is going to come a stage where if it carries on like this for Perkins, he's going to have to find him some form of first team role. There is definitely this group who are falling in between at the moment. You know, as I say, almost too good for the 21s, but not yet opening up for them with the first team. So I guess you then come into the debate about, do you send him out? Can you give him enough minutes to make it worth his while sticking around? Is there room in the squad for Nonto and Gilhart and Perkins? Can you play all of them? Can you use all of them? Can you spread minutes between them? Are they totally different players? Are they essentially the same or versatile in the same ways? I think this probably goes back to Michael's point. In Bamford, you have somebody who you say, number nine, you know, every day of the week, number nine, that's where you would play him. That hasn't always been the case in his career. It was different in Middlesbrough when he was scoring a lot of goals for Karanka up there. They used to use him out wide on the right and get him to cut in and shoot with his left. But these days, and at the moment, it's nine with Bamford. Everybody else, it's a kind of battle for positions, isn't it?
Funny when you weigh up Nonto and Perkins against one another, because I've just looked at their dates of birth and they're only basically 3 months apart. And yet you look at Nonto as somebody who seems to be that much further on. And it's similar to than Perkins. And it seems to be similar to the comparison that I made, that I couldn't believe that Aaronson was younger than Jack Clarke, because Aaronson seems that much further along. Is that down to going out and getting first team football then, as Michael described it earlier on?
It's part of it. It's also down to Italy being transitional at the moment. And I suppose the way I would put this is, does Nonto get into their Euro winning squad? He probably doesn't. You know, so if Italy are still in vogue like that and are still in that kind of form and that sort of style, then he's probably down in the under 21s, isn't he? And, you know, I don't know what the structure of Italian football is like at youth level, but it's incredibly competitive in England. You know, the under 21 squad, the under 19 squad. Perkins will be looking to make that jump as soon as he can, no doubt about it. But you have really, really talented England youth players at in the youth team squads. I suspect that Nonto is ahead of him. I would have thought he will certainly be ahead of him when it comes to the amount of first team football he's had because of his time in Switzerland. And that was the point. You know, that was when he left Inter Milan and said to them, I don't want to take a contract with you because I'm not convinced that there's any pathway here. I'm not convinced that you're going to use me. And he'd seen other players who had either taken the same attitude or had not had the kind of openings that they thought they might have done. FC Zurich was his option. Switzerland was his option. He went there knowing that it wasn't necessarily going to start straight away, but he was going to play, and he has, and it'll have been good for him physically. It'll have been good for him technically. And I think when you consider that Marsh is saying Nonto is going to be in the squad this weekend and Perkins, by the sounds of things, won't be, again, to read between the lines there, I think you can see who Leeds consider to be a little bit further up the ladder.
It's almost a shame we're not still in the days of the emergency loan window that we used to have, which was never an emergency, really, was it? When we used to use it, it was just signing some players.
I hated the emergency loan window because it meant that the transfer window never closed and transfer stuff never, ever stopped. It was just...
You love it,
Tom. It was just constant. And also, it was pretty rare for emergency loans, certainly those incoming at Leeds, to make any sort of material impact. Not to say none of them ever did, and there were a few exceptions and a few good signings. But I thought it was a good thing to get shot of that. And the thing is, you still have the option to send players out on loan. I think what it does is it forces clubs to think a bit more seriously about doing it. You know, are you going to commit to sending Creswell to Millwall for a decent period of time where he's going to play a lot, hopefully, and develop, as opposed to just 30 days where at the end of it, you might say, yeah, not bothered, or it's not really working, bring him back. Or the club who signed him might say, don't really want to spend more money on this guy. We haven't used him too much, having had all of like 3-4 weeks to settle in. I think this is a better system. And I suspect with Perkins, if he's kind of stuck in that limbo where he's looking for first team football and Leeds can't really give it to him, then yeah, I mean, a loan at some stage would make total sense.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Quiz time for you now then, gentlemen.
Oh, go on.
If you caught the presser, you'll be aware that Orta went for dinner with Angus. Presumably Radrizzani was there. Jesse Marsh was there. They had a chat about everything, as they do. It seems to be a 6-weekly thing, he was saying. They went to Iberica, which is a restaurant in Leeds. And I'm now going to question you about a couple of menu items.
All right. Just to throw a little story in about that. Orta used to do this thing, and I don't know if he still does it, Ellen Road, called the halfway line game. There's a floor in the stadium office, part of the office block, that's been painted with football, like a football pitch, you know.
They've got artificial grass down.
White lines, that's right, yeah. So what they used to do was they would have a competition with the staff and you'd have to roll a football, and try and hit the halfway line. And whoever got closest used to win, I think, £100 worth of vouchers for one of two restaurants in Leeds, of which Iberica was one. I've never been.
Well, let me test you with the menu. I've got the menu in front of me then. You can each have a guess about how much stuff costs. We'll go through different courses. So just on the appetizers menu, how much do you reckon the bread with organic olive oil is, and for your starter? What do you reckon?
$5.95.
Well, I'm going to go six. $6.95.
Oh, Phil's closer. It's a fiver. Mm-hmm. I hate it when people guess too high. Right, we'll move on to the classic tapas menu now then. One of the pricier items on this menu, pulpo, which is the grilled octopus with potatoes and pimenton de la Vera. How much do you reckon that is, the old octopus tapas?
Tapas dish. I'm going to go $9.95.
I'll go a penny more.
£18.90.
Ouch. Oof. For a single tapas dish?
Yep.
That's why the vouchers were 100 quid.
And finally then, the classic tapas, patatas bravas. This is the crispy potatoes in spicy sauce.
Nice that. Tenner.
That's got to be less than a tenner. £8.
Correct, Michael. £7.90.
Oh, well done. Very good. Dodge the octopus.
Have yourself get yourself a lolly. Well done. To the actual important part of that, which was the meeting and the chat that they had, and Marsh talking about the fact that he's a very open manager and he talked openly about the prospect of Orta leaving. And this was spoken about at Iberica when they went for their meal.
Jesse also said today that he would not be leaving. He said if he got an offer from anywhere in the world, he wouldn't leave, was the way he phrased it.
Oh, you mean Marsh said that about himself?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, just so we don't get confused here. There is obviously a link at the moment between Victor Orta and the sporting director job at Chelsea. So when Marsh was talking about that, he was saying, I can say unequivocally that Victor Orta is very happy here. I'm hopeful he'll stay. It's been a slightly odd process at Chelsea in that Todd Bowley, new owner down there, has been trying to get a sporting director, but has kind of encountered some pretty hard work trying to do it. There was the talk of Christoph Freund at RB Salzburg, them recruiting him to take that job. That didn't happen. He's staying at Salzburg. Nobody is denying that Orta is somebody on the radar. If you revisit the interview that we did with Andrea Radrizzani during the summer, you'll see that there's already quite a strong relationship between him and Todd Bowley at Chelsea. Seems to like Bowley a lot. They dealt very, very closely over the Rafinha deal that didn't happen, but was essentially lined up and good to go, had Rafinha not dug his heels in and insisted on going to Barcelona. So Orta being linked for that job, it remains to be seen where it goes and whether or not anything moves forward with that. Marsh was saying that he thought Orta would stay, but then spoke about himself, as in Marsh spoke about Marsh, and said that, yeah, he likes it so much at Leeds and he likes the way things operate there, that there is literally no job in world football he would accept, no coaching job he would accept if he was offered it right now.
Great that, Phil. Sorry, I was still looking at the menu for Iberica, so I didn't catch all that.
What else is catching your eye?
Well, I'll ask you in a minute, because we'll maybe close out the show on another couple of items off the menu. So no cheating in the meantime, no Googling. He did mention, did Marsh, that he had an agreement, as it were, with Orta, that if he was to take the job, Orta would stay while he was at Leeds, which I found interesting.
It was a bit tongue-in-cheek, that, and I think the conversation about it when they went out for dinner was a bit tongue-in-cheek. Marsh, I think, accepts that if there is a job on offer somewhere like Chelsea and it's much bigger money, which I think it definitely would be, then obviously Orta has professional decision to make, personal decision to make. He does have a family, Orta, Clint Young-Sung, Victor Jr. So, you know, like with everybody, as Marsh said, everybody has these opportunities that come up. Everybody has contractual commitments. Everybody has ambition, you know, this, that and the other. See how it plays out. But it isn't a secret that Orta, he was very much Orta's choice. It was Orta who'd analysed a load of coaches in Europe. It was Orta who, via the data, had liked very much what he saw of Marsh and had pushed that appointment as Bielsa's successor. So it seems to me that, you know, Marsh's position at Leeds is stronger and is probably healthier with Orta in the building. Given that you've got such an ally in him, you would much rather have him around, 100%. But I think it's safe to say that Orta is unlikely to say no to a job that he really fancies on the basis that he should be sticking around for the head coach. But I also think it would be a pretty big decision for him to go.
Yeah, even on a personal level.
He's pretty tied to Leeds.
I was going to say, with a young family and having just moved, apparently, you know, you're not going to want to uproot the kids, are you, all the time?
And I don't feel yet as if things have settled enough at Chelsea to know if that's a club where you want to go and be sporting director. You'd want it for the money. The money's going to be good. There's no doubt about that. But it's going to take time before everybody can say for sure how Chelsea operate with Bowley as owner. You know, what is that going to look like? How volatile is it going to be in comparison to how volatile it tended to be for managers and head coaches while Abramovich was owner down there? But I can understand why they would be looking at him and why they like him. And I hear all the criticism of Arthur, some of it I've shared over the years, but some of what he does is good. And some of what he has done at Leeds has been very, very good. You naturally look at the transfer side of things, and there have been some deals that have been great, there have been some deals that have not been great. But as director of football, your remit is a lot broader than that and covers a fair few stools well beyond the transfer market. And when you speak to people in the game, agents, people at other clubs and so on, there are plenty of people who speak really highly of the way he operates and what he does. So yeah, not a surprise if they are seriously thinking about it.
When Bielsa was here to have another bit of bookie.
Is that three or four shots you've had now?
I am going to bring some in at New Year. I think we should just get absolutely leathered. <didn't>
But Kinnear always
drinkaware.co.uk, by the way.
Used to speak about having other managers in mind for if and when Bielsa left. Do they have a similar list for if and when Victor Orta leaves? Like, will they have people already in mind to think, well, the next person might be whoever?
Well, what about the 49ers as well with that? There's another...
Well, everybody would factor in the way that... that they would do for a head coach's appointment as well. You know, you canvass the thoughts of your shareholders, particularly your major ones. They will undoubtedly have an idea of who else is out there and who they could go for. And it will be an extremely appealing job if Arthur was to go. As I say, there's nothing at this stage to say that he will. So we're being a bit preemptive with this one. But I've just mentioned how wide the remit is of a sporting director or director of football. So it stands to reason that you have to be as prepared to replace your director of football if you lose them as you are your head coach. You know, you've got to be in a position where you understand who can fit in quickly and who can work within the framework that you've set for the club, you know, within the budget, within the style or the type of players who you want to recruit. I don't think if Leeds found themselves replacing Arthur, they would want a complete clearing of the decks at all. I think they would want a lot of what's in place to carry on. So yeah, they will know what's out there. And don't forget that below Arthur, they've got other recruitment people as well who know the market.
Interesting to see what happens with the 49ers as well, with the dollar being so strong against the pound at the minute. And it feels like things are quietly sort of, I don't know, rumbling into action, doesn't it, with regards to those lot. We've got Parag Marate, who's going to be doing a Q&A at the Leeds United Bay Area get-together, which is at Levi's Stadium for the Villa game. They're doing a breakfast opening there. Leeds fans over in California will be able to get together and watch that game and hear from Marate.
I think a bit of clarity from him would be useful to know where the 49ers are, where they see themselves at the moment, what the timeline is. I mean, he never speaks in much detail about the specifics of what they're planning, you know, investment-wise, takeover-wise. He tends to be careful not to let too much of that out. But given that 2022 is kicking on towards 2023 and this option falls early 2024, it's coming to the point, really, isn't it? Or will do before long. And there doesn't seem to be, to my mind, any sign of the 49ers stepping back, put it that way.
Next summer then, maybe, would you? If you were to put your mortgage on it, your ever-increasing mortgage.
Ever-increasing mortgage, yeah. No, I'm absolutely not putting my mortgage on when exactly this will happen. There was a point last year where I thought it would have happened much sooner than it has already. But it's there in the background and I still think it will.
On to other matters then, and murals. You've written an article, which is on the site, The Athletic, about the murals in Leeds.
Yes.
And I guess another way to fill the gaping chasm of the last four weeks.
You said it. Yeah, you said it. I spent a day going around all 19. The Leeds United Supporters Trust have done this amazing map online that gives you the locations of them all. And how you go around it in the order that you decide to do it is entirely your choice. And it isn't like a sort of natural flow. You have to kind of pick and choose where you go. But I do love the fact that as you go around, you start to see more and more the way in which the kind of lasting impression and lasting legacy of some of the most important people in the club's history, and particularly representing the most important periods or the best periods of it. You know, so Wilkinson, although never as much of Wilkinson as you would expect for someone who made such a kind of critical difference to the development of the club, but, you know, representations of his players, representations of Bielsa and that squad, which is quite... It makes you a bit melancholy, really, because that squad is rapidly coming to the end, isn't it? You know, it isn't finished and it isn't done, but there's the mural of Luke Ayling that Andy McVeigh has done on Whitehall Road. You know, Ayling is not quite last man standing, but it's starting to get to that point. And that's a really interesting one because it's the mural of his goal against Huddersfield, and it talks about it being the last goal before the world stopped going round. And it does feel a little bit like that. You know, even though things have kind of got back to normal, there's some stuff that has changed and doesn't feel like it's ever going to revert to exactly like it was in 2020. But it's just helped that sort of birth of street art and growth of street art has just helped to give the city so much personality and identity, I think. And you can't help walk around and feel like the city's properly proud of its football club, as it should be. You know, it genuinely is.
Because I drive past the one in Guiseley, that's the one on the side of the Yorkshire Rose Pub.
Yes.
Which is actually, it's closed down at the minute and boarded up. Presumably, like, the licence has come up there, the landlordship, and nobody's taking it at the minute. And my heart skipped a little bit when I drive past it all the time, but when I first saw it and I thought, oh God, I hope somebody new doesn't come in and like paint over the wall or anything like that. Because that's the one with Revy Wilkinson and Bielsa on the side of it.
That's right. I met up with Adam Duffield, who goes by the name of Meds One in the art world. And he's been responsible for four of them. But the one that people probably know most about, aside from Hernandez on the side of the pub in town, is the Champions mural that he did with Matthias Clark on the wall outside Ellen Road's East Stand. And he said that, you know, Clark came up with that idea and they drew up the design, and he specifically kept all the paperwork for it, or all the drawings for it, because he was thinking to himself, at some stage this is going to get defaced and I'll need to go back and touch it up. And likewise, there's one in Holbeck, the park in Holbeck, which was done primarily because it was just otherwise, this underpass was otherwise completely covered in graffiti and it looked a mess. The council did want some kind of direction towards Ellen Road, you know, kind of steering the crowd in the right direction. More than anything else, they wanted it to look nice. They wanted it to look better. And a guy called Andy Sykes painted that one. And he said, it's never been touched. You know, it's never been touched. It's never been defaced. It's never been graffitied over. And that seems to go for every single mural. You can't find any evidence at all of any damage to them, which you would think in Leeds, well, of course not. You know, why would people do that? But there are idiots everywhere. And there are people who will just do it to spite other people and spite the people who've made the effort to paint them in the first place. And yeah, it was noticeable that they're all really clean. And it really did, to my mind, it really did underpin that thing they quite often say about, you know, high quality street art or positive street art, that it's good. It's good for places like Adam Duffield said. It's the sort of anti-broken window theory. The more of that street art you do, the more people want to look after it. And Andy Sykes, who did the one in Holbeck, said he went to have a look at it one day and he's got, I didn't meet him in person, so I've never seen him in the flesh, but he said he's got quite a painter's or artist's look, kind of long hair and everything else. And he said he was stood by it having a look, and one of the locals came up to him and said, don't even think about touching that.
It's funny, isn't it, how people get protective over stuff like that? You know, and what do you think it brings to the city?
For me, I just love seeing Leeds United in Leeds again, because I think back to the Bates era when even really basic stuff like the club shop was pulled out of the city centre and it disappeared from view entirely, did the football club. It was, because where it is, it's not far from the city centre, but it is out on a limb and it is a bit of town that, truthfully, you don't go and visit other than to go to the football. So to have it spread across all of Leeds again, and these aren't just city centre, rather that, you know, the murals do span right out across the kind of wider area now. So I think it's brilliant just to see them. And some of the ones that you just come across, they kind of take you by surprise, some of them, because they're not in... They are just on the side of random buildings like pubs and stuff. And if you've not seen it and you're going to drop something off with someone in Leeds and you go, oh, there's Vinny.
There's Calvin, who plays for Man City now.
Yeah. It tells stories though, doesn't it? And even on the Calvin one, you've got Albert Johansson and Lucas Radebe. So, you know, that kind of diversity message and the three of the most important black players, you know, others as well through the years, but certainly three who've had a huge impact on Leeds. And it tells stories, the artwork. That's what it does. It was interesting. There was no kind of jealousy or rivalry, I didn't think, between any of the artists. It wasn't a case of anybody saying, oh, mine's better than his, or, his was just copied from here, or that one was lazy, or no effort went into it. And all of them said they absolutely love the one at Hyde Park, which is Bielsa's face looking out over, with the quote about, you know, a madman with new ideas, looking out over the crossroads below. And I think it was Phil Harris who did the one you were talking about on the Yorkshire Rose and also another one on Meanwood Road, who said, you see that, and even if you, I think especially, if you have no idea who he is or what he's done or what the point of that is, you'd want to find out. You'd look at it and say, what is this? I want to know who this guy is and why it is that he's got this painting on the side of the wall
Maxi Rodriguez visited it recently. I don't know if you saw that picture.
Yeah, I was going to say, he was photographed in front of it, wasn't he?
But that is what you do, isn't it? You come over here and you go looking for that stuff in the same way that if any of us went over to Rosario, you'd go looking for the street art there, wouldn't you? And there are others in the pipeline. The Supporters Trust are about to do one of Domati's goal in the San Siro, which is nice. And, you know, I just think it's kind of lasting memories, isn't it?
That's falling by the wayside soon, isn't it, as well? The San Siro getting knocked down.
Well, there you go. Won't be lost completely.
Yeah, time stands still for no man, eh? Right, back to the menu of Iberica before we close out the show.
Our Aston Villa on it, anyway.
They're not. You'll be looking forward to going back, though, before we get on to cured meats.
To Elland Road?
Yeah, I can't wait. Massively. Cannot wait. Yeah.
I was even thrilled to see Jesse today. That sounds harsh. I don't mean it in that way. I mean, I just mean because it was...
I'll tell him.
Because it meant the return of football. I was like, oh, yes.
This is familiar.
This is the Leeds manager talking about football again. Brilliant.
I think psychologically, I'd prepared myself properly for the World Cup coming. It's going to be weird, that period. But, you know, you have it in your head that that's in the diary and that's what's going to happen. And there's going to be this long open space of nothing going on. But this one has caught us all by surprise. And it's important for them to get going, Leeds, isn't it? It's important for them to play well at the weekend and to get the results ticking over again. Part of me wonders whether it's not a bad thing that it's been so long since Brentford, because you have to think that little bit harder to remember any of it. But
it's like looking back on an old relationship, isn't it? Like your teenage girlfriend, you forget why you broke up in the first place. That was nice, wasn't
it? Over time, you find yourself thinking about Sinisterra's finish and going, wow, it's worth it, you know, worth the trip for that. And, you know, Villa, I feel very much fall into the category of team that you should be 100% competing with this season.
Yeah, we were saying this week when we were previewing it that it's one of those games that kind of just falls into that bracket of lower mid-table teams that can all beat each other. Hopefully, we just get enough of them going our way this season that we don't have to get antsy again.
Yeah, and I don't feel as if they've changed wildly from last season. So I would like to think that lessons learned from that awful night, Marsh's first home game against Villa, will actually be quite pertinent and quite useful when this comes around, notably not just leaving Coutinho to do what he likes and play wherever he feels like it. There is pace in their team. There is threat in their team. I think they have good players, personally. I'm a little surprised that it's been as difficult for them this season as it has been so far. But yeah, winnable.
We're on Twitter, at The Phil Hayes Show, if you want to say hello. theathletic.com/LeedsPod. To get on The Athletic, £1 a month, 6 months. Go on, Phil.
I was just going to say, worth mentioning as well, that there will not be Jesse Marsh on the touchline this weekend.
Oh, of course, yes.
Yes, his ban from the Brentford game kicks in. It was supposed to, the idea was that it would be imposed earlier in the month, but obviously there haven't been any games. Forest postponed, Manchester United postponed as well. So it will be this weekend. He didn't seem to think it would be a big problem. He said actually he quite open to the idea of watching the first half of games from a higher vantage point. I was thinking back to Steve McLaren always doing that any time he came with any club, but Derby's the one that sticks in my head. He'd come and sit in the press box for the first half and watch Ronaldo Vieira run riot and then, you know, hot tail it down to the touchline for the second half. Marsh was saying as well that when he was at Leipzig and it was all ending for him, his last three games he watched from the kitchen in his home because he had COVID, he kind of said, it's about as miserable, I think, an experience as he's ever had. But you have staff, that's why he has Rennie Maric, he has Mark Jackson. They all know the drill. They all know what's going on. He can speak to the players beforehand. He can see them at halftime. It's probably not going to be a big factor, and it will keep his nose clean.
I enjoy the fact that on the ban, he said he didn't agree with the decision not to give Somerville a penalty. He didn't agree with the decision to send him off, but he respected the decision to ban him. And he's like,
essentially, this is all wrong, but I'm not going to fight him. He's gone a bit Bielsa there, actually, in that he felt as if you could pretty much...
The authorities have a difficult job.
You could pretty much impose anything on Bielsa, regardless of how unfair it was, and he would say, the authorities make the decision, and I accept it, and that would be that. But I think this is one that's worth just, you know, he's probably done the right thing to just sweep it away and get rid of it, because while it was a very, very contentious decision, and while I think it should have been VAR reviewed, the more you carry on like that on the touchline, the more you're going to incur punishment like this.
Anchovies.
I love anchovies. You know,
back to the
brown ones or the white ones?
Just to refresh your memory, if you weren't listening closely, Iberica, the restaurant where they all went for their meeting, the directors and Jesse Marsh were just picking menu items here. We're going back to the appetizers bit. Anchovies, what do you reckon? How much?
Are they in a vinegar?
Starter.
It actually just says anchovies. There's no other explanation.
I'm guessing they're being like a vinaigrette type thing.
Well, they
nice them. I like them.
Well, Boccarones are underneath. That's anchovies in vinegar.
Okay, so these might be like a fresh grilled one.
£8.
Go for a bit more. £9.
I was going to say the Boccarones are actually £7.90. That's the ones in vinegar.
But
the ones above it, £13.90.
Ouch.
Yeah. We'll spin on to the cured meats now, the jamon ibérico.
Go to the co-op. I buy anchovies for like 79p a can from there.
the jamon ibérico, the cured ham, the best one that they've got on the menu, the Juan Pedro Domecq. I'm sure you're familiar with it.
Yeah, big fan of his.
Yep.
How much for a portion of that?
If it's the good one, probably like 15 quid or something.
£20?
£15.75. Congratulations, Michael. Let's finish on a big pan of rice, the paella, the seafood paella for two. It's got prawns, it's got squid, it's got langoustines. What are you saying?
You're going total price, not price per person.
This is for two. It's for two people. It's, yeah.
£40.
I'm going to go more, 50.
£39.90.
Yes.
Well done, Phil Hay. There you go. That wraps up the show for this time. We'll be back after the weekend to review Villa. We'll speak to you then.
The Phil Hay Show.